Welcome again to the Cannabis Investing Podcast, where we speak with C-level executives, scientists, and law and sector experts to provide actionable investment insights and the context with which to understand the burgeoning cannabis industry. I'm your host, Rena Sherbel. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the show, the third episode of SPAC Week 2, the final episode of SPAC Week 2. Really excited to have Michael Orbach back on the show, founder and chairman of Subversive and the parent company. He was on last month, SPAC Week 1, talking about the parent company. We have talked about that company since Michael's been on. We personally have it in our portfolio. We're excited about what that has to bring to the market and the growth that it has ahead of it. Michael gets into that today to give us an update and see where we're at and where we have to look forward to in terms of the picture in the U.S. And then getting to Subversive Real Estate's deal with Intercure, Candoc, the leading cannabis company in Israel. And as Michael points out, the only profitable cannabis company outside of North America. So an exciting deal. And as we tweeted out this morning, what Chris DeMuth said on the episode yesterday about liking big SPACs and SPACs with Roman numerals. Well, listen to what Michael says about his SPACs. And it's nice to see all of these SPAC conversations filling us with the knowledge and insight that will serve us as investors. So hope you enjoy this one. Hope you've enjoyed SPAC Week. Before we begin, a brief disclaimer. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice of any sort. I am Long Trulieve, Chiron, Isracan Biosciences, the parent company, and Air Strategies. You can subscribe to us on Libsyn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Stitcher. Michael, welcome back to the Cannabis Investing Podcast. Super happy to have you back on the show.
Thank you, Rena, for having me. It's a pleasure to be back.
It's a pleasure to have you back on. And we were just talking, I'm not typically used to talking to guests so close since their last interview, but you've had a lot of news coming. I also really like talking to you. I'm also excited about all the things you have going on. But I was saying, I wanted to tell you this when we hit record. I felt like we talked to you about the parent company, and then I guess it was a couple weeks later you announced Subversive did a deal with Intercure, the biggest cannabis company in Israel. And my thought was the last scene in The Usual Suspects when they're starting to piece together Kaiser Soze as Kevin Spacey walks out. And I was like, oh, that's why you said you were best friends with Ehud Barak. And oh, that's, I should have pressed that question on Israel. And everything was just like, it's a beautiful mind moment. So I was very excited to see that deal. I also,
bottom of the cup.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
The bottom of the cup.
Skokie, Illinois. So I feel like I kind of missed the boat on some follow-up questions. So I'm super happy to have you back on. So thank you for coming back on.
With pleasure. And I'm not Kaiser Soze.
There will be no villain here.
Promise.
Yeah.
Exactly. No villain.
So talk to us about the deal. How long was it going? Did you know when you talked to me that it was about to go down? I assume you did.
So, you know, we originally launched this vehicle to be a REIT. We attempted to create a competitor to IIPR, and we went to the market in October, November with a transaction that just didn't work. There was a few technical reasons why. You know, we structured our pipe as a convertible pipe, and we had $186 million in real estate transactions, and the equity investors were waiting for us to know whether or not we would have the cash to be able to close the transaction, and the pipe was contingent on being able to close the transaction. So it's chicken and an egg, and therefore nobody traded the stock. And so we pulled that transaction to regroup and spent about a month all the while trying to close the parent company. I was then spending the other 24 hours of the day trying to identify another target. And so we looked at, once we decided we weren't going to do a REIT, we sort of looked very broadly at cannabis and non-cannabis operating companies. We evaluated over 20 companies. I really did want to do something in cannabis. I didn't, you know, there was nothing else in the US that I felt very compelling to do. And so so we dispensed of that pretty quickly. And then I called Alex, who is the CEO of Candoc, in December, and said, you know, hey, I've got this vehicle. You know, I've wanted to invest in Israeli cannabis now for 7 years. You know, my wife is Israeli. I spend, you know, months of the year in Israel and think it's a very compelling market, especially if it goes adult use. You know, now's the time. should we use this vehicle to combine? And, you know, Alex didn't, you know, miss a beat. And within, you know, 24 to 48 hours, we had a signed LOI.
It's interesting. In looking back, I saw that you guys filed something, I think in December, maybe at the beginning of January, about a confidential. Was that this?
That was this. Yeah. So they kept it quiet under a securities rule in Israel called 32B, I think, for about 3 weeks. I was concerned about announcing a second transaction as we were closing the parent company, because there are similar investors and I didn't want there to be any confusion in the market. I didn't want people to buy or sell Candoc or the SPAC 2, not understanding that we're in the process of de-SPACing SPAC 1. And so I thought it would do real harm to the transaction. And so we asked Candoc to hold the announcement until after we had closed the parent company transaction. And so we announced, I think, a week after we closed the parent company's transaction.
Okay, so I have a few clarification questions. Number one,
sure.
InterCure owns Candoc. Is that how you would put it?
Yeah, so InterCure is a public vehicle that, you know, 99% of their business is Candoc. And so they have a couple of other sort of small orphan biotech assets that are kind of, you know, not immaterial. And then Candoc also owns 50% of Candelam, which is a series of pharmacies that they partnered with. And then they intend, you know, outside of the Candelam relationship to acquire and partner and with additional pharmacies within the country.
Okay, good. And then in terms of it being a REIT or a SPAC, is it a SPAC, not a REIT? Because you still have a REIT in the title. Do you want to explain to like investors what that means and
sure.
for them?
Yeah. You know, learning experience, don't put what you plan to do in the title of your name in case you end up not doing it, because it is confusing. So we're trying to figure out if we can adjust that somehow in the naming before we de-SPAC. But no, it is not a REIT. We are still structured as an LP as opposed to a corp, but that will convert on the closing of the transaction.
And for people that want to get in on that, I know that it's going to, I mean, contingent on the deal being done is it being listed on NASDAQ. So if investors want to buy the stock, they're buying into Subversive right now and that changes into it automatically?
Yes. So the best way to participate now is to buy either our OTC ticker, SBVRF, or our NEO ticker, which is SVX.U. And then on closing, those shares will convert to NASDAQ listed shares. This will be a dual listed company in the end. So you will still have the Tel Aviv Stock Exchange listed InterCure and then a NASDAQ listed InterCure.
So those holding the Tel Aviv stock definitely want to hold on to that.
Correct. You definitely want to hold on to your Tel Aviv. Because what will happen is that, you know, currently InterCure is probably trading at about, I think, a 20 to 30% discount to what we're buying them at, which is normal until you get closer to the transaction. And then the stocks will equalize. There won't be any arb between the Tel Aviv Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ. And so you know, that arb will disappear on closing.
And while we're doing clarification questions, I had one about the parent company. When you guys changed to GRAMF, the ticker, was that deliberate? Did that go as planned? I was kind of it seemed like it didn't go as planned, but I wasn't quite sure what happened there.
So we always had planned to change the ticker to gram.u in Canada and gramf as the F share on the OTC. It didn't go as smoothly as we had anticipated. It was trading as gram.u in Canada, but then was still trading under the Subversive ticker in the US because of the holiday. You know, it was our mistake. We shouldn't have done this over the holiday weekend. So it was a holiday in the US where there was no trading, Dr. Martin Luther King Day. And so it changed to Gram in Canada and was trading on that Monday. But then the OTC requires, you know, 48 hours to change the ticker. And so people that had the old Subversive name on Monday weren't actually able to trade as Gram until Wednesday or Thursday. And so it was completely out of our hands. It was a technical issue with the OTCQX. And I think it caused a little bit of heartburn among our investors, including me. But now things have settled. There is a bit of a word soup going on because we've got the parent company, Gram. You know, some people still consider us Subversive. That'll all sort of, you know, come, we'll be able to clean all of that up in the coming weeks. It is the parent company. That is the name of the company. And the ticker is Graham, Graham F in the US and Graham.U in Canada. And I think as we do more announcements and there's more sort of, you know, SEO on Google and, you know, things of that nature, then it'll just become a more of a household name.
And Subversive Capital, that's still its own trading entity that will stay that way? Like, what are you looking to do there?
No. So every usually SPAC sponsors, you know, will use the name of their corporation and it'll be like Subversive, you know, one, Subversive two, Subversive three. I should have just used that nomenclature, you know, Subversive Capital Acquisition Corp one, Subversive Capital Acquisition Corp two. With the REIT, I added real estate to it, which was a mistake. Live and learn. And so if we do additional SPACs in the future, we'll just keep the same nomenclature so people aren't confused. It'll be the first SPAC, second SPAC, third SPAC.
Okay, good. So concentrating on Israel right now, the InterCure deal, tell us, I mean, anybody reading the press release or following InterCure, Candoc, we had Saul Kay on from ICANN a month or so ago, and he was talking about how Candoc is schooling everybody in Israel. They did a deal with Charlotte's Web. They had the deal with Tilray and Afria. They have a deal with Cookies. There's this sweet dispensary that they're building in Tel Aviv that every time I pass it makes me excited. So tell us why you did the deal with them.
So I've been traveling to Israel all of my life, and for the past 7 years, have been looking for an opportunity to invest in cannabis. You know, I came to know Candoc through my relationship with Prime Minister Barak, and just you know, they're really best in class. Alex Rabinovich, the CEO, has invested $25 million of his own capital into the company, and has been the CEO for the past 5 years, and has really built something quite special. And so, in thinking about, you know, the Israeli market having these 13, you know, limited licensed holders, and having 15% of the market and rapidly growing quarter over quarter, you know, who would be the most responsible with such a significant balance sheet, and who has the opportunity to, you know, really command sort of 40 to 50% market share in the country? Because if I look at, like, sort of, you know, if I look at, you know, my friend that owns the super farms, you know, he's got a commanding lead on sort of on pharmacy chain in the country. And, you know, there are other examples of corporations in Israel that, you know, have sort of these oligopolies within the country that sort of command, you know, real market presence. And I think that Candoc is well positioned to really dominate and consolidate that market and be responsible with the capital, as well as I've been very impressed with their ability to partner with the leading cannabis partners globally. And so, you know, when I'm on the board of Tilray, I introduced Tilray to Candoc early last year, where they did the first export shipment of cannabis to Israel. And since then, I've developed very close relationships with Afria and Organigram for indoor flower, and this co-branding licensing relationship with Cookies, one of the leading California brands for Cookies branded product in the country, as well as Cookies branded retail, which is going to be really cool. I think the Israeli consumer is going to love that.
Well, that was the other Kaiser Soze moment for me, was remembering that you were on the board of Tilray, and then it all was just, so I had a feeling that you were probably instrumental in that relationship happening as well. Interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, I like to tell this story. Brendan and I, the CEO and founder of Privateer Holdings and the CEO of Tilray, first traveled to Israel in 2014. So shortly after I made my first investment in Privateer. It's when we first met all of the LPs. And so we traveled throughout the country. You know, I introduced them to my family there. I brought them over. We went up to the north, the Tzfat, where my wife is from. You know, and the fascinating part about that was, you know, one of the leading LPs at the time, which will still remain nameless, not Candoc, of course. When we were touring their facility, you know, they told us, you know, we've got X amount of patients. And I was sort of counting the trays. and doing the math in my head. And I said, well, if you have X amount of patients, you have enough cannabis here for, you know, something like 15 times what you've just told me is your patient. And like, yeah, we store it, you know. And so there was a lot of leakage from the illicit market to the illicit market in Israel. In 7 years ago, that has changed somewhat. I mean, there's still some issues with some of the LPs and, you know, how they're providing both licit and illicit. But you know, one of the reasons why I'm so attracted to Candoc and Intracure is the level of professionalism and compliance with all legal regulatory frameworks is very important to me. And you know, Ehud is not going to put his name onto a company that you know isn't strictly adhering to all Israeli regulatory rules.
It's interesting. Something that we've been talking a lot about in the past few months is the notion of these companies that were always doing things right, like abiding by regulations, but not just to the letter, kind of going above and beyond and readying themselves to be ready for the next leg of regulations. And then there were these companies that were kind of always pushing up against the edge of regulations, either breaking them or getting caught or being right on the right side of not breaking it. And it's known in Israel, I mean, this whole notion of playing both sides of the field in these companies. And it seems very clear that Candoc was able to do those partnerships because likely they had this management that was doing things by the book. Do you feel like that's how they were able to build their advantage here?
That's exactly right. So when companies like Tilray or Afria or Organigram or Kronos or others start searching for opportunities within the country, because they are U.S. listed, you know, NASDAQ issued securities, compliance is of foremost importance for the ability to continue to be listed on the NASDAQ. And so when doing diligence on the 13 plus LPs or the 13 LPs, Candoc stands out as the one that really doesn't has zero history of issues with compliance. I mean, all of them have had issues with, you know, is my gate not high enough or the door and the camera doesn't work. But these are issues that all, you know, Canadian LPs deal with Health Canada as well. But you know, there were a number of Israeli LPs that, you know, as part of their business plan was to play both sides in terms of, you know, supplying to patients in the legal market and also supplying into the illicit market as well.
I'm curious, do you think that's part of the reason why we're still not kind of adult use legal or closer than we should be because of these breaking of regulations, but also because the illicit market is kind of being fed, and so nobody's, you know, complaining all that much, I guess?
Yeah, it's exactly what happened in California as well. So California, if California had done it correctly in the beginning, prohibition in the United States would have ended because we would have seen the California model working, and that the illicit market would have been diminished and the legal market would have flourished under the medical program. But because the medical program was essentially just a backdoor for an expansion of the illicit market, it took many different iterations of the California legislature to come to the program today. And there's still a massive illicit market in California. For the difference between California and Israel is that, you know, 80 to 90% of what's illicitly grown in California is actually sold outside of California. From an illicit perspective of what's grown in Israel for both the medical market and the domestic market, Israeli growers are not, you know, exporting to Jordan and Lebanon and Egypt.
Perhaps when they do, peace will come. I think that might be. Yeah.
Yes, I do actually think, I think Ehud has commented on, you know, the idea that cannabis could lead to, you know, more regional peace efforts. And so it's not a bad idea.
I mean, I'm telling you, cannabis from Israel, hash and hashish from neighboring countries, I think it's like the perfect merry-go-round.
Yes, my wife keeps mentioning that there's just no hashish culture here in the U.S. And so we're really missing out on a consumer in some of these legal markets. California has a couple of hashish players like Biscotti and others, but it's a product that doesn't have a huge following within the legal market. And you know, part of that's probably to do with branding. But I do think that that whoever can solve the sort of packaged hashish market for both Europe and, you know, Israel, South Asia, and South Asian communities within within the U.S. is going to make a killing.
I agree. I remember the first time some of my American friends tried hashish and they're like, "Oh, I like this. I don't like cannabis. I like this." Yeah, yeah, it's a different thing. I'm with you. So talking about the Israel market, for instance, we have these upcoming elections that seem to have derailed the promised 9 months of, you know, when Israel's going to be adult use legal. What's your thought, and as like a collective thought coming from the executive board, what are your guys' thoughts on this coming year and legality?
Yeah, I mean, I still think it's a potential possibility for this calendar year. It's probably more likely sort of Q1, Q2 of next year we'll have more clarity on adult use. But it is something that that sort of, you know, all parties in Israel have represented that they support for the most part. You know, even some interesting words coming from, you know, King Bibi around it. And so it wouldn't surprise me if he took advantage of that particular social issue as he moves into election season here. But we'll see. I mean, it's very hard to, you know, as an outsider, I mean, this is what, your fourth election in the past year.
2 years, yeah.
You know, it is very sad and frustrating to watch. You know, where is the, we need some more dynamic people on all sides to step up and run, because we're not getting the kind of leadership we need in the country from the, you know, from any of the parties that are currently in the race. But in terms of how it will affect adult use, I think, you know, all party platforms are pretty much on the same page, sort of similar to the U.S. This is very bipartisan, the legalization of cannabis. And, you know, Israel's been hit hard, as a number of municipalities and jurisdictions throughout the world have, from COVID. And this could be a good use of the legislative process to bring in extra tax dollars for jurisdictions that have been hurt and harmed by lockdowns and other COVID related economic matters.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And I might add, as a front row seat, it's even more depressing, the whole election process. It seems, though, like this could be a huge push to them. And I would imagine Ehud Barak lobbies the government on behalf of this. Maybe Alex does too, maybe more people do, but I certainly imagine that they have a window into that. Does this deal push it forward? Do you feel like this changes people's minds?
I do. You know, when going back and thinking about all the companies that, you know, that I've liked over the years, I mean, we even suggested that we might provide one of the LPs with a supply agreement to expedite export, so that they could take that supply agreement, you know, at Tilray, so where they could take that supply agreement and show it to the regulator and say, hey, you know, expedite export because we've got, you know, a deal across the country or across the globe that would be really beneficial to the industry. So similarly, thinking about that, once we have a very well-funded group, you know, and we anticipate having, you know, north of $200 million on the balance sheet at closing, you know, there will be no competitor to Candoc in Israel. And so when, you know, similar to what happened in Canada, once you have a very well-funded industry, you know, regulators look to expedite certain, you know, regulatory changes to adhere to the sort of the new platform or the new landscape of both, you know, the legal companies that have, you know, a very robust balance sheets. So it's just a different, it's easier to go to the government with $200 million in the bank and a real business plan than going to the government with $2 million as a startup. And you want your, you know, your first glass house to be built somewhere in the north.
And these investors are international investors. They're from all over.
Yeah. So currently the $225 million in trust, because we're a SPAC, is a combination of, you know, institutional capital, hedge funds, I would probably say it's more of a, 60% US, 30% Canada and 10% global. We've also raised to date a $65 million PIPE so that we could meet all cash conditions and other conditions of closing. So there's no chance that this deal doesn't close. We've met all of our conditions of closing. And so if, we anticipate limited redemptions plus the $65 million, we're going to have a very, very robust balance sheet in line with other industries in Israel. Very, very significant. Plus access to U.S. capital markets with the NASDAQ listing.
Right, right. I mean, the NASDAQ listing is really huge. It's like such a game changer. It's really exciting to think about, I think, like what that does. How long were you putting the capital raising deal together? How long did that take?
So for the $225 million in trust, we raised it last December, January, when we anticipated doing a REIT. And the $65 million private placement was non-brokered or self-brokered by me. We did that in 3 or 4 days. Called a couple of high net worth individuals and a couple of institutions to ask them if they wanted to participate. We wall crossed them. And everybody's super excited around this deal. It's this company is the only profitable company outside of North America with a market potential, if adult use is to legalize, of $2 billion plus, as well as the medical market, which is expanding month over month. And Candoc's 15% branded market share is increasing rapidly quarter over quarter. I mean, Candoc has been profitable, Candoc has doubled their revenue sequentially 4 out of the past 5 quarters, with in excess of 50% gross margins and in excess of 30% EBITDA margins, and they've been cash flow positive since Q3 of 2020. None of the Canadian LPs and many of the US players don't have those kind of margins and strong balance sheet performance.
I would say, like, both with the parent company and here, I think you've expressed it in both cases, but it's certainly very evident that you're, kind of consolidating and dominating the market. Like, that's the model that you're going for. Was that always the plan? Did you have a different plan when you sought to, be a part of the cannabis industry or buy a company in the cannabis industry? Did it change at some point?
So I've always wanted to be a part of the first 100-year company in cannabis. I think that the parent company, is the right platform to do that, because I do think that the U.S. companies will dominate this industry. And there's this opportunity because we're on the cusp of the end of prohibition. And so just from a regulatory environment perspective, I think that the U.S. will dominate in terms of brands and position, and that the parent company is really positioned, with its relationship with Roc Nation and having Jay-Z as our chief visionary officer. They really are set to dominate not just the U.S. but globally. And even we see that with Candoc. If I look at Candoc and Israel being really a medical market, pharmaceutical market, where you need a prescription from a doctor and you can pick up your cannabis within a pharmacy, it's very different than the California model or any of the other adult use. And I'm wondering, and we'll be curious to see sort of what that adult use platform looks like in Israel when all said and done. But cannabis aside, Israelis love U.S. brands, the reason why Alex did a deal with Cookies was because, Cookies does have a very strong following. They're one of the only brands that has been able to successfully multi-state in an asset-light manner. Candoc is going to launch the first Cookies-branded pharmacy in the world. And I think that you'll start to see other U.S. popular brands, including brands of the parent company, that will not only find places for itself throughout the United States, but globally as well.
Yeah, Israelis love U.S. brands and they love their cannabis, so it's a win-win over here. Perfect marriage.
What's one of the things I love about the Israeli market and I've always loved is that, of all the markets that have legalized both medical and adult use, Israel is a market that has no stigma associated with cannabis from all different sectors, from the ultra right to the left, gender, age, positionality, class. There is no stigma around the use of cannabis in the same way that exists in other jurisdictions, even places like Canada, where the stigma still exists. And so, I was always interested in, especially in the older population, how willing sort of older Israelis were to forego, sleep aids or pain management or other types of pharmaceuticals to gain access to cannabis. And so I think it actually has the highest per capita rate in the world in terms of citizens using cannabis, both from the licit and the illicit market. And so that's a huge opportunity because, once you legalize for sort of the entirety of the population where you don't need to go through the prescription model, I do think that you're going to see, many Israelis substituting alcohol with cannabis. Substituting, pharmaceuticals for various indications with cannabis, I really do see that this could be one of the best markets to operate in is going to be Israel.
Yeah, I could not agree more. I mean, I think it has to do with a couple of things. One, I think it has a little bit to do with the fact that smoking is more accepted here in general. Like a lot of people still smoke cigarettes, for instance, which we're not advocating, but that whole notion I think is more a part of the culture here. And I think the other thing is cannabis goes really well with like PTSD. And I would say as a culture, we all have it here. And it just goes really hand in hand with what's happening in this area. And it's just like, I couldn't say it better than that. I think it just goes really well hand in hand with the culture here. So
I couldn't agree more, Rena. I think that Israelis, particularly Israelis, but I think the Jewish population in general sort of suffers from collective PTSD. And, it's not just PTSD from, the holder of the Holocaust. I mean, just our holidays in general sort of reinforce post-trauma, on a monthly basis. Israelis, including in my family, are always on edge and having access to something that sort of takes the edge off, that isn't alcohol, which has all sorts of other, underlying effects that are quite negative, is quite positive. And it's probably also, I think that alcohol use has obviously increased in Israel over the past 20 years, where it wasn't the case 20 years before that. A lot of that was the influx of, other immigrants coming from Eastern Europe and Russia with more alcohol cultures, the use of alcohol. I do think that Israelis probably move more towards the sort of the cannabis or hashish as a way to relax than, shots of tequila and vodka. I mean, even if you go to a bar in Israel, like I see people with one beer and they hold the beer for, 2 hours. That's not a culture that we have here.
Because likely they've smoked three joints in the time that it takes them. They've probably gone outside twice. Yeah. I mean, anybody who hasn't been to Tel Aviv, you walk around the streets of Tel Aviv, you know how much Israelis love their cannabis. It's very self-evident. So what's the plan in terms of importing and exporting the cannabis? Is the plan to export the cannabis coming from Canada?
Yeah, I mean, I think that right now they've imported Indoor from Organigram and Glasshouse from both Tilray and Afria. As they expand their northern and southern facilities at scale, I think that it will primarily be, grown for both domestic use, so as input into their own brands, but also, Israel from an agricultural perspective and, Candoc included, will be an exporter of product to Europe and to other jurisdictions. I do think that the sort of the cost per gram or the cost to grow cannabis in Israel will be competitive globally. And so that it will become a competitive international player on export. I think, the market isn't as mature as it needs to be for that to be the case. But in a couple of years when sort of the adult use regime is in place, I would say the majority of cannabis grown by Candoc will be for Israeli consumers. And that there'll be a robust export supply chain coming from Candoc into Europe and other jurisdictions.
And this is cannabis grown indoors and outdoors, right? Candoc is one of the unique companies here to be doing that. Is that correct?
Correct. They've got two main facilities, both sort of glass house and outdoor. Their indoor capability comes from relationships that they have for import, and the ability to scale up also indoor in the country. I mean, the weather is so great in Israel for growing. There's no humidity like you have in Florida and other places. And so the need for, you know, importing product is going to be de minimis over the next call it half a decade. But still, I think Israeli consumers like the, you know, just like Canadian and California consumers, that sort of high-end indoor high THC bud is definitely something that consumers still want access to. And so that will either be done, you know, in Israel through their facilities or continue to import from players that have been able to scale their indoor operations.
And another one of their big deals was with Charlotte's Web. And CBD is interesting here. I mean, you can get it kind of delivered online, but you can't really get it here unless you're willing to pay some kind of crazy premium. Where do you see CBD, the industry here? How do you see it maturing and how fast do you see it maturing? And what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, it's really just a regulatory question. The Canadians are dealing with the same issue. You know, it's easier to get THC in Canada than it is to get CBD, and it's cheaper to get THC in Canada than it is to get CBD. You know, CBD in certain countries other than the US at this point is still, you know, considered a very dangerous narcotic, which is obviously not the case. So you know, legislators start to deal with the new regime around adult use, we envision that, you know, CBD will, that those CBD restrictions will adjust in short order, and Israeli consumers will begin to have access to CBD as a wellness product.
You feel that CBD, like, where do you see the Israeli market? Do you see them embracing that CBD? Is Charlotte's Web, is that partnership one of the things that is like kind of at the top of the list that you guys are the most excited by? I mean, Charlotte's Web is like maybe the best CBD company to partner with, I might venture. What do you think there?
Certainly, Charlotte's Web is certainly the leading CBD public company in the world. They definitely gained significant market share in the U.S. As being one of the first players out of Colorado to provide CBD outside of Colorado. So have developed a really good sort of brand awareness and have done a good job of getting their brand into people's hands within the US and Canada. So partnering with Charlotte's Web was certainly, one of Alex's, notches on the shoulder in terms of all the strategic partners that he has. I can see that, you know, I think we'll probably start from sort of high CBD strains or high CBD tinctures branded in Israel through the medical program in terms of prescription, and then eventually move to more wellness based products that are available, you know, out within pharmacies, but also outside of pharmacies as well.
And we talked last time about how Israel, like, going adult use, that it's talking about following the Canada model, but, you know, we've talked about how successful the California model is, also about how many similarities there are between California and Israel. Where do you see that going? How do you see it playing out when they do finally kind of change the laws?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it'll go more the sort of California model than the Canadian model. You know, I do think there'll still be a pretty strong medical program within Israel. Just from an insurance perspective, I do think that that Israeli consumers will demand that that their insurance still cover, or that there's some cost protection when it comes to using cannabis as medicine. And so I think that will continue. Not dissimilar to Colorado, having the two robust programs, adult use and medical. And on the medical side, there's just a different pricing model in terms of taxes. But both programs have succeeded quite successfully. So I can see Israel, keeping its medical program to ensure that that there's still affordability on behalf of patients, but also access to those that want to enjoy it as a every responsible adult as any other product that people use.
Okay, so talk to us about where you see like the next year to 2 years, both for the parent company and what are you calling this company? What's this company going to be called at the end of the deal?
So it will still be listed as Intercure, and I think Candoc will remain the name of the cannabis sort of the cannabis brand. Don't tell this to Alex or he's going to listen to this. I'm not crazy about any name that sort of has the name cannabis in it. But I do think it's created sort of a household name in Israel. I can imagine in two years that Candoc will be the lesser of the known names, and it will be more of the brands that are in people's hands in Israel, whether it be cookies or if they license any brands from the parent company or create any net new brands. I think that, you know, this industry is moving towards, you know, going to a dispensary or going to a retail environment and buying your favorite branded product. And that same goes for the parent company. You know, we've got a number of brands in the portfolio. You know, people may not know us as the parent company, but they'll know that they want Monogram, or they'll know that they want, you know, cookies in Israel. And so that's where I think this market is going. And so the corporate names are less interesting. Most people don't know all of the brands of Procter & Gamble or Diageo or ABFF.
I was just going to say, yeah, in this day and age, nobody knows what the real company is. I mean, I was like, oh, they own Burt's Bees.
Why? Yeah, exactly. And so that's where we're moving.
Gotcha. And so where do you see kind of for the picture for investors? What's your runway for growth? Where do you see it in the marketplace? Talk to investors for a couple minutes where you see it going.
Sure. I mean, I'll start with the parent company. As you've seen, you know, over the past couple of weeks with the political tailwinds and news out of Washington that, you know, the end of prohibition is essentially here. The legislature, the Congress is working on a bill that combines a number of bills that will include banking and descheduling and the other social justice components involved. And so I think that there's a real opportunity to buy into sort of the U.S. cannabis operators that are listed in Canada, including the parent company, which is still trading at a discount to our peers. The investment opportunity there is that, you know, all of these stocks significantly re-rate when they're able to list in the U.S. And the parent company and a few others that are listed on the senior exchanges in Canada, in terms of time to be able to list, that time will be truncated given the relationship between the senior exchanges. And we've also seen, you know, other U.S. Cannabis companies that are listed in Canada start to file as U.S. registrants. So GTI is filed as a U.S. registrant and just raised $100 million in sort of a, you know, an offering within the U.S. And so all of those names are trading at a discount because, you know, the access to U.S. retail investors is limited because they're either on the OTC or they're traded in Canada. And so from an investment perspective, like, that's the opportunity, U.S. cannabis. In terms of Israel and outside of the U.S., I do think that, you know, what we're putting together with Candoc is one of the, if not the most compelling investment opportunity outside of North America. Just given the fact that it's very, very similar to Trulieve in 2016, 2017, where they held, you know, a 15% market share and now have a 50%+ market share because, you know, they were strategic, they had a strong balance sheet and very competent management and were able to basically outperform everyone in the state. And then couple that with the fact that Israel doesn't have what the U.S. has in terms of 280E taxes. Where, you know, all of the EBITDA within Candoc goes to free cash flow, and so, you know, the Candoc could be, not only will be the number one player in Israel, but really has the potential to be a formidable player internationally.
First of all, very well said. We started talking about REITs and just talking now about how it's going to change in the U.S. and with safe banking and, you know, possibly getting rid of 280E. Certainly at some point they're going to have to get rid of it. What do you see for the REITs, right? Like IIPR, you said that you wanted to model after that, but some people think that whole business model might change, like, once it gets regulated and legalized and the banking opens up. What are your thoughts there?
So even so, 280E is definitely going to, if the tax treatment for cannabis retail and operators adjusts, then you know, sky's the limit for these companies, in my opinion. On the safe banking side of things, with the access to banking, I think it will make it easier for you to work with sort of your local bank. I do not think that the tier one banks are going to immediately come into this market and start underwriting the types of real estate transactions that IIPR are doing, or some of the smaller debt shops have been doing over the past couple of years. And so I still think that's probably a couple of years post legislation, where JP Morgan and Bank of America and Goldman Sachs and others will start to underwrite this industry. It will also be difficult for some of these tier one banks to sort of overlook the fact that these companies have operated in sort of a federally illegal market, and now all of a sudden they're legal, with ignoring the fact that they, were committing federal crimes for, multiple years before the law changed. And so they're going to be looking for guidance from the U.S. Justice Department and the various regulators to ensure that they get comfortable with underwriting the new industry and sort of forgetting the past illegality of the main players in the space. And so they're just going to be more sensitive, because the tier one banks have gotten into trouble in the past for a lot less, and so I think they're going to tiptoe into the industry. And so I still think that there's lots of opportunity for companies like IIPR. Advanced Flower is doing their IPO on the NASDAQ. It's a cannabis mortgage REIT, and so I think you'll start to see more of that maintaining its strategic advantage until at least 24 months to 36 months after legislation has been adopted.
Yeah, I think that's what's really interesting about cannabis, and also sometimes confusing. I think, well, when this happens, but like when that X factor happens, it's like still another year to 2 years, maybe even until all the little moving parts get worked out. So I think even when things change, they don't just change. It's, it's a whole process.
100%. And so the one thing that's been missing from the debate that I do hope that, Congress starts to look at seriously is the lack of interstate commerce. And so, I do think rightfully that the debate within Congress has moved beyond just legalization and decriminalization to providing real relief to communities that have been so negatively affected by the prohibition of cannabis and the war on drugs, and providing real social equity and justice to those that that have been caught up in the war on drugs and have been so harmed by the prohibition of cannabis. At the parent company, we launched this Social Equities Ventures platform as part of the transaction, where we're going to invest at first $10 million into entrepreneurs of color and in the cannabis industry. We've already received over 100 inbounds of folks looking to raise capital. But because there's no interstate commerce, if you're in Chicago and want to launch a brand, you need to be fully integrated in Illinois. It's very, very expensive. You need to create these duplicative assets if you want to leave Illinois. And so there's no other industry where you have to, if you have a great idea and you live in Kentucky, you cannot sell that idea in California. And so the people that will be most affected by that will be people of color and entrepreneurs of color that don't have access to the kind of capital, both venture capital, private equity, banking, that white entrepreneurs have. And so I really do hope that Congress starts to seriously look at this idea of interstate commerce, where entrepreneurs across the country can participate in this economy equally. And there'll still be centers. I mean, if we look at alcohol as an example, every state has its own spirit, whether it be a wine or a bourbon or a scotch. And there are certain counties within this country that are still dry, that don't allow alcohol to be sold there. But we should be able to grow cannabis in California, package it in Colorado, and sell it in Miami.
Yeah, could not agree more. I think the word for me for this past year has been absurd. And like the whole notion of interstate commerce, cannabis in general, it's so absurd. It's like obscene that it's not being handled. But yeah, here's hoping that these positive legislations really are positive and not just headlines and not just sound bites, but do real work. And also it's why, what you're doing is so important, why that fund is so important. I was talking to Marie-Mar Marquette, who's a woman of color, and she owns her own cannabis business. And she was saying, it's not just the disadvantage of being a person of color that brings on all those disadvantages that we know, but it's first-time business owners. So just that, having all the knowledge and the information and the strategies. So, you know, I applaud those efforts. I want to be a part of those efforts. I try to be a part of those efforts. I encourage everyone listening to be a part of those efforts. It's a salient part, I think, of being an investor in the space, to be a conscious investor and not just looking for profit, but profit and purpose. So, yeah. It's always a pleasure.
Well said.
What?
I said, well said.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you. Well, Michael, it's always a pleasure to have you on. I always learn a lot and have new things to think about after we're done talking. And it's exciting to get you guys in Israel. It's exciting to see the deal, exciting to see news, good news coming out of Israel, good headlines. Anything you want to leave listeners with before we go?
No, just that I dropped a bunch of Easter eggs into this interview for you to figure out what I'm going to do next. So we'll see.
It's always an adventure. That means that you can listen to this twice, three times. I myself will be listening to it again. We can all have our Kaiser Soze moment. Thanks so much for listening to the Cannabis Investing Podcast. Subscribe or follow us on Seeking Alpha, Libsyn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or Stitcher. And we'd really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other investors find our show. If you have feedback or questions, we'd love to hear from you at Rena plus the plus sign CANPOD at SeekingAlpha.com. That's RENA plus CANPOD at SeekingAlpha.com. Thanks so much for listening and see you next time.